Waar gaan we nu naartoe? Wel, naar de Verenigde Staten. Daar hebben we Derek Monroe gebeld, die we dus ongeveer maandelijks een keer aan de lijn hebben over toestanden in de VS. Heeft nogal een Rusland-obsessie of een obsessie met de obsessie van de Amerikaanse overheid en de Democraten op Rusland. Nu, we beginnen met een korte bijdrage of een kort commentaar op de Valentijnsschietpartij in Florida. Dat laten we eerst horen. Hè. Kijk wat hij daarover te zeggen heeft. Derek Monroe uit Chicago, gisteren aan de telefoon.
Well, as it turns out, what's interesting about this time around, the news cycle is much longer than usually be, because usually it's 1 or 2 days, and you know, the president would make some kind of pronouncement, and the flags would be put at the half mast, and nothing really changes. This time around, the kids, I think it's very encouraging to see the young citizens of our country basically are saying enough is enough, and they're organizing both on social media as well as through the private sphere, and they're trying to do something about this. There's conversation about going to Washington on this, not only in Tallahassee, which happens to be a capital of Florida, but there's interesting backlash taking place at the political level, specifically from the right wing. Fox News recently reported 2 days ago that actually the reason the kids are well organized and actually are able to be so effective in galvanizing public support is that they're getting support from liberal groups, let's say money and organizational skills, as well as the kids are getting again help from, and please pay attention to this, from Russia. So anything, what's really interesting, anything that's got to do with the quote-unquote, but it's interesting how this all plays out, because first of all this Russia scare and all this, you know, McCarthyism originally came from the center left, from the Democratic wing of the party, you know, yep, with the Hillary Clinton stuff. And now it's migrating to the right, where it seems to me that it's sort of being played out as a quote-unquote Russian plot now to run the discord in the United States. And it's very, very strange to see this. It's a very sad and, I think, dangerous way to see it.
It's just like the new version of the communist threat in the 1980s and earlier. Yeah.
People are being attacked. Jill Stein was attacked. You know, Assange, of course, is being attacked. Bernie's been really attacked rather savagely by the right, stating that, you know, he's getting support from trolls and so on and so forth. So this is really something that's really unprecedented to the degree of scope, which I never seen, you know, in my life. I'm 50 years old. Lifetime to such degree of viciousness and unmitigated viciousness and without any kind of, you know, allegations of proof against people who are basically speaking out against certain policies of our government, even in political parties.
Yeah, Derek Monroe, dus activist, journalist, consumentenrechtenactivist vooral. Hij is zowaar positief deze keer. De mensen die hem in het verleden gehoord hebben en ook verder zullen horen, zullen wel merken dat dat meestal niet het geval is. En hij is positief over de beweging, de jongerenbeweging die nu van de grond komt. Hij wijst daarbij dan wel op de reactie vanuit de rechterzijde. Volgens Fox is de beweging tegen de vrije verkoop van alle vuurwapens gesteund door alle soorten linkse organisaties. En inderdaad, Rusland. En hij merkt op dat dan heeft er wel een punt, dat gans die Rusland-hetze eigenlijk in gang gezet geweest is door de Democraten. Hij belde dan naar de publieke radio. Er was een uitzending op de NPR, is dat zeker. Ik zal dat in een linkje zetten, de gegevens van die uitzending. Belde hij naar een debat dat ging over Rusland. Dus dat was naar aanleiding van het feit dat er deze week 13 Russen in staat van beschuldiging gesteld zijn door Special Counsel, ik weet niet wat de juiste vertaling daarvoor is in het Nederlands, Robert Mueller. Wel, het probleem was eigenlijk, toen hij inbelde, dat hij vond dat er geen echt debat aan de gang was, want de gasten waren allebei aan het inhakken op de Russen en benadrukten hoe verschrikkelijk dat wel was, dat gehack en dat getrol. Tijdens de verkiezingscampagne werd er al gewezen naar de Russen, omdat ze zouden mailservers van de Democratische Partij gehackt hebben. Volgens Derek Monroe klopt dat helemaal niet en is achteraf gebleken dat het gewoon een lek was van binnen de Democratische Partij zelf. Dat het niet de Russen waren die de mails gestolen hebben van Hillary, maar ze zijn gewoon naar buiten gelekt. Nu probeert men dus aan te tonen, hij zegt het gaat naar een volgend niveau, dat het entourage van Trump samenzweerde met de Russen in de aanloop naar de presidentsverkiezingen van 2 jaar geleden. Hè. Trump Jr., het wordt een beetje ingewikkeld als u het niet allemaal gevolgd hebt, zou met een Russische advocaat hebben samengezweerd om vuiligheid over Hillary over te kopen. In werkelijkheid had de advocaat helemaal niets van informatie te verkopen over Hillary. Maar ja, heeft ze gewoon een verhaaltje verzonnen om een afspraak te kunnen krijgen met Trump Jr., omdat ze hem eigenlijk over iets anders wilde spreken. Goed, we zullen dus dat tweede stukje waarover hij, waarin hij daarover heeft, nu laten horen aan u.
Dialed into a radio program.
Yes, it's one of the most it's actually the popular flagship program of the National Public Radio, NPR, in Boston, basically where they present different views. And what's interesting about this program, which was taking place this time around, is that they don't have an opposing views. They have two people from military / think tank industry come in. Basically, I wanted to point out a very interesting and very strange migration of the narrative, how this whole situation really kind of developed. Original idea was that Hillary Clinton got attacked, you know, and Podesta, the DNC, got hacked by the Russian, you know, Cozy Bears, Dancing Bears, whatever, Russian hacker group, which was alleged to be part of the Russian government. And then they disseminated the information, the emails, in order to, quote-unquote, defeat Hillary Clinton in the polls. This thing was actually debunked. There was a great article about a year ago at Counterpunch magazine involving a, I believe, British diplomat at the time that actually was approached by the staffer from the Clinton campaign to give him a, quote-unquote, a stick, memory stick, with all the emails. And they've been beating this horse for even now. I mean, it's although it's kind of quieted down, but it's been beating horse for years and for, you know, since the beginning. And then second stage was migration was towards the idea of Russians having a huge influence of our political system to the degree they're helping that Trump. And there are so many allegations about Russian meeting with the officials of the Trump campaign. Specifically, there was this really big hubbalaboo with the degree of meeting with the Russian lawyer that met with the Trump Jr. that were supposed to have dirt on Russians. I did some digging on this, including some sources that I have in Russia, and it's a complete misrepresentation of what really happened here by the American media. Of course, media doesn't rebunk the story and doesn't go any further. Just the idea, a narrative is stating that, you know, the Trump campaign has met with the Russians about, you know, dirt, while downplaying complete fraud and fabrication of the so-called Steele report, which was basically a hatchet job opposition research towards the, you know, towards the Trump campaign, which people don't even want to mention at the point right now where both the FBI paid for the research to the Steele team to continue this. As in this whole opposition research migrated into the official investigation by Mueller, which at one point was actually completely disproved. It was completely quit. They basically, FBI said, they're not paying for this stuff anymore because it's so out of bounds and so unrealistic.
So that's a campaign against Trump, you said, and organized by the FBI, is that what you said? But then also based on incorrect information?
Exactly. Steele report is basically opposition research, which was presented as a fact. And at the beginning, no serious media wanted to release it. BuzzFeed got hands of it, and they released it. BuzzFeed is a very famous news site, you know, famous on basically working on clickbait and stuff like this. So most of the stuff was completely disproved. It was not even properly written. I mean, I was getting feedback like people are, did some graduate student, which basically could have written it. I mean, just there's so many holes in the whole idea of dossier.
Yeah.
Zo, Dirk Monroe. Hoe de samenzwering met de Russen opgeblazen wordt enerzijds en ook voor een stuk gewoon niet op feiten gebaseerd is, maar anderzijds fake news tegen Trump, zoals het Steele Report, wel opgeblazen wordt. We gaan straks verder gaan in de derde deel met Monroe. Gaan we een aantal andere stemmen aan het woord laten in het debat. Dus, maar eerst een plaatje. Dus 40 jaar geleden, Wayne County. Wayne County and the Electric Chairs uit 1978. Dat is de tweede LP van de groep. Maar we moeten vooruit. We gaan dus Derek Monroe, deel 3. Laten we dus een aantal andere stemmen aan het woord. En Derek Monroe kan er dan op antwoorden. Mercy Wheeler, politiek journaliste, die op Democracy Now haar licht laat schijnen op het Ruslandschandaal. Zij gelooft dat er wel degelijk iets aan de hand was, hè, maar vindt het ook overtrokken. Eerst heb ik het in ons gesprek over de radio-uitzending waarin hij inbelde. Een van de gasten beschreef hoe hij naar een fameus gebouw ging in Leningrad, Sint-Petersburg, waar alle trollen van Poetin zouden samenzitten. De man legde uit op de radio dat hij daar zelfs niet binnen mocht. O, jawel. Dus Derek Monroe en Mercy Wheeler. Pardon, Marcy Wheeler.
Current accusations, I thought they had more to do with a system of trolls set up by the government and influencing the social media. And in that radio program that you dialed into, there was this man who supposedly went to this building where all these young guys were, these young trolls were there, and then, yeah, he's not allowed to go into a building. I said, well, there's probably a lot of buildings in the U.S. you are not allowed to go into in companies.
Yeah, so. Well, there was an NBC reporter, I believe, and mm-hmm. He actually didn't go. He just went to the front desk, and they spotted some footage taken by some employees a year ago or so. But CNN team even got better. CNN actually went to the garbage dump and actually were on cameras basically going through the garbage in order to find some stuff. I mean, this is really freaking ironic. I mean, this is just really, you can't make stuff up. Even like, I think it's funny how CNN news truck is being reduced to the garbage truck, basically. I mean, it's so desperate to try to prove something that really isn't. The reason I was taking off the call from WBUR in Boston, because I spoke rather precisely about migration of this narrative that's basically dead at a point of logic and any kind of proof presentation, but it continues, takes a life of its own and migrates into something completely different. And now the issue is with the trolling, you know, companies and so on and so forth. But what's interesting about Mueller's memo, which I actually read, is that first of all, the fundamental issues such as missing connections between 13 and the Russian government and Trump campaign, there's just really nothing there. And there's absolutely, the idea was that also brought forward by and amplified by the U.S. media is that their efforts were extremely successful, spent X amount of money, and so on and so forth. 56% of all the ads which were posted in supposedly support of Trump were after the election. And the amount of money, I think Facebook went on record stating that it was about $50,000 altogether, which was spent according through their sources.
A while ago, I heard a number of $100,000, which is nothing really. Now I heard a figure of $1 million a month, which is more substantial. But still, actually, there was Marcy Wheeler who was on Democracy Now! Earlier this week. Or you know who she
is? Yes, I know.
I want to let you hear this. It's like first a piece of 40 seconds, and then there will be a small pause of 3 seconds, and then there's another piece.
Well, so with the trolling, let's be really clear that while Russia did spend a lot of money to do this, it's a drop in the bucket compared to what either side, the Republicans or Hillary Clinton, spent to do the same kind of activities. We don't know what else Mueller is going to show. The trolling, this is stuff the United States engages in all the time. It's considered fair game for intelligence agencies. Even stealing hacking tools, fair game for intelligence agencies. Hacking political candidates. The United States does that as well. One of the reasons Putin did this is because of the sanction regime put in place, because of what he perceives as the same kind of activity in 2011 and 2012 in elections in Russia. So is more of the same
he
going
felt that
to...
Hillary Clinton supported protests against him.
Precisely. And with the same kind of online activity and the same, I mean, we call it democracy promotion, but it uses some of the same kind of tactics as these troll farms used on us.
So, Derek, she's got a slightly different approach. She's not saying that it didn't happen, but or that there's no link, but she says it's just exactly what we, the US, do.
True. And, you know, multiply by number of different amplified by millions compared to what the Russians are spending on this.
This was also brought up during that conversation on the radio station, and I did extract a clip of 1 minute by David Salvo, resident fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy. Yeah. So let me play that one as well. Minute and 15 seconds.
The United States is active in a lot of countries that aren't democracies. What's the U.S.'s own track record when it comes to interfering in other countries' political processes?
Well, I think certainly in recent history, the United States has been a lot more transparent about what they do to promote democracy abroad. I don't think there's an equivalence between the United States government funding NGOs, let's say, in other countries to conduct the same sort of work that NGOs conduct here, and that's to strengthen political parties and build civil society and expose corruption. So, you know, we're not trying to covertly manipulate public opinion in another country. I think we're trying to strengthen democratic institutions abroad because we see that as in our interests as well. So I think it's much less insidious, and I think, frankly, we have the moral high ground in a way that these types of campaigns can't claim to have.
Of course, we haven't always been totally transparent about our efforts. There have been covert efforts as well, perhaps not so much in recent years, but certainly in the past.
Absolutely, but I think we've had a reckoning about that and as a nation, and I think there are way more checks congressionally and legally than other countries have on their...
So that was David Salvo. We have the moral high ground. I think that were his words. So basically, he agrees with what Marcy Wheeler said. So says that yes, we're doing it as well, but it's different. It's
open, but also he also made a reference that it was in the past. Now we're different now.
Well, he said it's more ethical. In the past, we did it hidden. Now we're more open about it. It's better and it's more open.
I would just point out the last month's elections in Honduras. How the election was stolen from the Mr. Nasrallah, happened to be a effectively democratic elected president with the U.S. influence. You know, this was taken over to the incumbent, and it was pretty transparent, not only from the degree of involvement of political pressure from the United States, but also American-funded NGOs and foundations. So this is really both covered in overt. So, you know, this is something that you listen to this and it seems to me like those people live in either in make-believe world of parallel universe where they create their own echo chamber, they really believe that stuff, or that that's cynical to simply kind of lie and cheat.
Do you know who that organization is? Alliance for Securing Democracy.
Oh, yeah. There's also another foundation run by the people from the ex-CIA, which is the Freedom of Defense of Democracy. The Defense of Democracy Foundation and something like this. They're usually are funded not only by covered by from the right-wing think tanks, but they're also funded by military-industrial complex, military contractors, you name it. But, you know, this type of degree of manipulation also extends to the left as well.
But, of course, in some cases, it's really difficult what is true, because, frankly, I personally, it seems logic to me that the Russians or the Russian government interfered. Why not? But what I also want to talk about
most likely we did. Yes,
the response, because it was Glenn Greenwald who said, "Okay, so we're going to do. What are we going to do now? Because comparisons are made with what the Russians supposedly did or Putin supposedly did with Pearl Harbor. So we said, are we going to respond? Are we going to respond like Pearl Harbor?
You know, you can't. You honestly can't make this stuff up. It's like, it's something like, I don't know, from the lowest and darkest annals of the Soviet propaganda, where the things are blown so much out of proportion to simplistically not only insinuate, but inflame the situation. You know, what really troubles me more than the degree of those really outlandish allegations and comparisons, that there is no backlash against it. That really troubles me.
Derek Monroe over dus Russiagate. En het eindigde met het, blijkbaar wordt de vergelijking gemaakt door sommigen in de VS met tussen enerzijds wat de Russen doen, dus die aanvallen tijdens dat getrol tijdens de kiescampagne, met de aanval door de Japanners op Pearl Harbor. En dus dat was dan Glenn Greenwald, die zich afvroeg, ja, gaan we dan ook op die manier gaan reageren en gaan we de Russen gaan bombarderen uit wraak? Dus we hadden naast Derek Monroe hadden we Marcy Weir aan het woord. Dat was een stukje genomen uit Democracy Now. Zij zegt dus wat Russen gedaan hebben. It's a drop in the bucket in vergelijking met de totale uitgaven door alle lobbygroepen eigenlijk in de Verenigde Staten. Het stelt niet zoveel voor, dus we moeten dat toch wel een beetje in context plaatsen. En dan hadden we dus ook nog David Salvo aan het woord. Dat komt dan uit het programma. Dat is waar Dirk Monroe op inbelde. Dat is iets van WBUR, dus het radiostation. Dat is dus geloof ik gelieerd of gesponsord door de NPR, dus de overheidsgesteunde radio. Het programma heet On Point. David Salvo was dus een van de twee gasten dus. Hij zegt dus eigenlijk ja, dat Amerikanen, dat is allemaal iets anders. Dat is niet te vergelijken wat de Amerikanen doen met wat de Russen doen. Dat vindt Dirk Monroe belachelijk en hij verwijst naar wat de VSA een paar maanden geleden nog in Honduras hebben gedaan. Dat was namelijk de vervalsing van de verkiezingen getolereerd om niet te zeggen meegeorganiseerd. David Salvo is dus een resident fellow at the Alliance of for Securing Democracy. Wat is dat voor iets? Volgens Dirk Monroe heeft dat iets te maken met voormalige jongens van de CIA. En inderdaad, op Wikipedia staat dat the Alliance is chaired and run primarily by former senior United States Intelligence and State Department officials. Voilà. Het laatste deel nog, nog een minuutje of zes. In het laatste deel wordt het onderzoek van Robert Mueller, dus de special counsel, die de zaak van tegen Trump, ja nee, een inmenging van de Russen, bekijkt. Van op een heel andere kant bekeken. Niet gewoon gezien als een zaak die gelinkt is aan Rusland, maar daarbuiten. Waarom? Jared Kushner, Kushner, dus de schoonzoon van Trump, die zou ook in de picture komen. En opnieuw is Marcy Wieler daar aan het woord. Het laatste stukje, Dirk Monroe.
What was interesting on what Marcy Wieler had to tell is that she took the whole thing outside of the context of Russia conspiracy alone, because she said there's been an angle. Basically, these people are being accused by pretending. You can do unethical things in the campaign as long as you tell who you are, then it's okay, apparently. And the indictments now are because people have been interfering without telling who they really are. Now, regardless of this Russia thing, she takes this to another level and talks about Jared Kushner, so the son-in-law. And now I want to let this play. This is about a minute and a half. What do you have to say about that?
The main charge was conspiracy to defraud the United States by basically pretending to be something you're not, by pretending to be engaged in good faith politics when you weren't. That's actually the same charge that Paul Manafort and Rick Gates are facing. They are pretending, according to Mueller, to be engaged in lobbying for American interests when, in fact, they were representing the interests of pro-Russian Ukrainian political party. The reason why Kushner's business deals are important, we've talked about how poorly Trump's people have separated his business interests from the interests of the country. The same is even more true for Jared Kushner, whose family business is basically bankrupt. And over again, he's been shown to be in negotiations with entities, including Russians, but also Chinese and Middle Eastern. So he'll go in and say, okay, we'll talk about this grand peace plan, which is not about peace at all. But, oh, by the way, can you bail out our 666 Park Avenue building, which is badly underwater? And I think Mueller could make the same argument he's made with the IRA indictment and the Manafort indictment and say that Jared Kushner is pretending to be serving America's foreign policy interests. But in fact, he is just doing his own bidding. He's just trying to bail out his own company. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's moving towards a very similar indictment on conspiracy to defraud the United States having to do with his conflicts of interest.
Marcy Wieler again. I thought it was very interesting because it puts the investigation in a different perspective. So it almost, it's not. And especially, yes, if you're looking from the point of view of Russia, but especially the right wing or the, well, it's more, it really becomes something more pro or against Trump right? Because this is about now removing a son based on legal arguments. The point is that, on the one hand, we've got the Russian angle, that it might lead to consequences or wars or problems with the relationship with Russia. But on the other hand, it may also affect Trump himself. It is a real problem, of course. I mean, his son was, where is he now? He was in India, right? Trump is here. He's just telling his business.
I'm not defending Trump here. And I think the actions that his family members are doing, are taking, in this case, are contrary to the belief of running a state which is not only based on degree of democratic principles, but on basic degree of transparency that actually reinforces sovereignty of the nation itself. That said, it seems to me that the spotlight is on Trump for political reason, and not on the people from the previous administrations.
If Trump or Trump's son or Trump's entourage is attacked now because of their conflict of interest, is that politically motivated? Because that's, of course, what is...
Of course it is. Of course. We live in this neoliberal reality where everything's political. Absolutely everything's political. Listen, if they're politicizing a degree of kids who are protesting against gun violence, they're making it look like it's a political...
Yeah, but we're not talking about the NRA here. We're talking about the special prosecutor of the... what is it? The parliament or... Yeah?
Well... But, look at the FBI. As much as you'd like to believe in the rule of law and understanding the Department of Justice, try to do the right thing by the law, look at the history. I mean, look at the situation under Hoover. Look at the degree of FBI's involvement in, with the civil rights movement, spying, cajoling, what have you.
But isn't that a bit, can always, can't you always, I mean, are there concrete indications that Mueller is indeed just trying to get to Trump for political reasons, not just do his job? Because of course you can always say yeah and be cynical and of course that cynicism is justified probably, but is there not more to that? Are there really concrete indications that he is politically motivated?
Well, I think if I was before on the fence about this, when I looked at Mueller's indictment and what's not in there, to be actually, one cannot just help but notice it's a political motivation here in play, because there's just simply no legal meat on the bones, if you want to kind of look at it this way. It's like they have to produce a result of something, and this happens. But just as a final shot, I can tell you right now, what's really disheartening here in CITES is that the degree of our country's descent, I mean, the falling down of everything, not only the society, but just everything, economically, politically, it's astounding. I mean, it's just the speed. You can also see it from everyday basis. I drove to the city last night. I was working downtown. I haven't been there in a couple of months. The roads get much worse. Like, people are not really, nothing is being really fixed. I mean, the weather wasn't that bad compared to times in the past, but there always been some kind of stuff going on. So, you see degradation of the whole thing. I mean, it's sad. I took a subway. I didn't drive downtown. I took a subway for a while, and just people's faces and just this overall feeling of gloom. It's really sad. It's sad to see this.
Voilà, dus Derek Monroe, it's sad. Zo, hij vindt het gans gedoe rond met special counsel Mueller toch vooral een politiek spel. Hij zegt over de aantijgingen van de there's no meat to the bones. Of dat klopt, weten we eigenlijk niet, maar het lijkt ons sterk dat er niets van zou kloppen. En hij eindigde dus met een groot beeld van de Verenigde Staten. Hij reisde naar het centrum van Chicago en het zag er allemaal niet zo goed uit.